This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Welcome to The Discourse, a short-form, one-on-one interview podcast with filmmakers, actors, and other film industry folks, brought to you by The Playlist and hosted by myself, Mike D'Angelo. Today, I am led through the dark world of The Absence of Eden. The film is the first from artist Marco Perego Saldana and stars his wife and co-producer Zoe Saldana. The film follows multiple characters from both sides of the U.S.-Mexico border and revolves around the dilemmas faced in dealing with basically the many hardships brought on by immigration laws and the enforcement of those laws. The movie is also produced by Martin Scorsese and co-stars Garrett Hedlund, Adria Arjona, Tom Waits, Chris Coy, and many more. Joining me to discuss the film is writer-director Marco Perego Saldana and wife Zoe Saldana. Like I said, this is Marco's first foray into filmmaking, but he's primarily known as an artist, mainly painting, sculpting, stuff like that. You likely know Zoe Saldana from her many blockbuster roles like Gamora in Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy. She's also in Avatar, the recent Star Trek films, Special Ops Lioness, Columbiana, The Adam Project, so much more. There's so many you could list. We spend most of our time discussing their film, The Absence of Eden, which is very powerful and emotional and heartbreaking. Marco really did a great job his first time out. Obviously, it doesn't hurt when you have amazing performers like Zoe and Garrett Hedlund and Adria Arjona and Tom Waits just nailing their parts. But obviously, it's a very heavy subject matter and just tries to stay as close to the human stories and the reality of the immigration issue our country is currently facing. Of course, you know, being a big fan of Zoe, I tried to get some fan questions in about Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, whether she's done or not as Gamora, if there's more Star Trek coming. We talked season two of Lioness, which I highly recommend checking out season one for those who missed it on Paramount Plus, another excellent Taylor Sheridan series. But before I shoot you over to the interview, I've got to tell you that The Discourse is a part of the Playlist Podcast Network, which includes The Playlist Podcast, Bingeworthy, Deep Focus, and more. We can be heard on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, wherever you find your favorite shows. Be sure to subscribe and drop us a comment or a rating, as we do very much appreciate it. Or just head on over to theplaylist.net for film and TV news, interviews, reviews, and more. Okay, for our listeners, The Absence of Eden hits theaters on Friday, April 12th. Here's my chat with husband and wife creative powerhouse duo Zoe Saldana and Marco Perego Saldana. Doing super good. Thank you for the time. I really appreciate it. I watched Absence of Eden actually today. I found out about this interview yesterday, so I got on it right away. But I was really affected by it. So congratulations on this one.
Thank you so much. You mean a lot to us. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, so I absolutely want to dig into that. But I always like to kind of open up as a movie buff. I like to just start talking about films that shaped you. So for me, when I saw things like Batman 89 or Back to the Future or Princess Bride or Ferris Bueller's Day Off when I was like 4 or 5, they kind of broke my brain open and made me fall in love with film and storytelling. So I'm always curious, what did that for creatives when I'm interviewing them? So what were those films or even, you know, books or whatever it was that kind of broke you both open?
You want to go? Yeah, for me, I really like Nostalgia and the Stalker of Tartoski. And I love so much La Strada of Federico Fellini, like 8.5. And the beauty sometimes Stanley Kubrick is capable to do. Quindi I have always this dream about making a film that they look like Stanley Kubrick, but with the pain of maybe a movie like Amore Speros, and in the same way wrote by Cormac McCarthy. And if you ask me what is the very big inspiration, this is the honest truth, like the idea to really go deep in the human behavior is something I'm very fascinated and interested in. But to capable to show in this beauty essence of images and life, you know, and that's what for me, I'm asking myself this question, if you is a movie can be extremely beautiful and extremely painful, because sometimes when you do a beautiful film, you don't feel correlated or you don't feel it in. And that's the question I'm asking myself when I'm watching a watching film.
But for me, I'm going to jump everywhere. My life as a dog, I watched it as a child, and I was Igmar. I felt like I was really much aligned with Igmar. The Last Unicorn was just an animation that I was deeply moved, not because of the quality of the animation, but the topic of it. For some reason, I felt it. The very first Dune, David Lynch's Dune, it gave me that introduction of like character acting at its finest. and I you can watch it I understand that it wasn't a fan favorite, but I was 6 years old when I saw it and I was transfixed.
Yeah, you like
so the Goonies, books like Crónica de una Muerte Anunciada, you know, all the books the Colombian writer, No One Writes to the Colonel, 100 Years of Solitude. ¿Cómo se llama, mi amor? Love in the Time of Cholera.
Mm.
You know the writer. I'm 45. I can't believe I'm forgetting it. He's one of my favorite. But like, we have to find it. Can somebody help me? Gabriel García Márquez. Gabriel García Márquez. And Stephen King, you know, like it was just reading literature, you know, when he wrote a book called Different Seasons, and that's where he had Rita Hayworth and the Shawshank Redemption, The Body, The Apt Pupil. I would read books like this, and I remember thinking, oh my God, like I would love to tell stories like this. They would affect me at my core. And I love films that are just, you know, dealing with just human behavior. And I feel like that's what brought me to Absence of Eden, not just because my husband wrote it and he was going to direct it and he asked me to be a part of it, but he just really created characters that were in very uncomfortable and unconventional situations, and they were acting either poorly or greatly, and they would go unseen every day. Like, that felt to me so familiar, so normal. And even though my life around immigration is not close, I don't have sort of like situations where we live, you know, deeply affected by immigration, but we are surrounded by people whose stories around immigration we know, we're curious about, we ask, we're deeply moved by. So that's why I wanted to be a part of this project. For love,
yes. In the mood for love, I love it.
Awesome. This is obviously, like you were saying, it's a passion project for the two of you. For the uninitiated, you're a married couple. You're both creatives. You were saying Marco had written the first draft here. How did it become like, this is our project? And what was the origin with that?
No, just I witnessed firsthand Marco's phases, like putting this together.
Yeah.
Choosing the conversation, creating the drafts, writing, co-writing with Rick Raposa, putting the film together, getting all the producers on board, you know, finding all the money for the movie. I mean, I had a deep firsthand sort of approach as a witness of how hard it is to put and make an independent movie. It's real. It's like it becomes an extension of you. It becomes like your child. You make room in your life for this project as if it's a person. And I saw how deeply affected he was by it throughout the whole process. I had nothing but deep respect for what he was doing from the beginning. The fact that Marco could have chosen to do anything, to tell any story as his first project, his first film, He chose immigration for a reason, and it's not unfamiliar territory for him. You know, in 2016, Munger created a you can tell them.
No, it's cool.
A concept, a sculpture surrounding this topic that was he was deeply moved by. In 2015 or 2016, there were reported 714 children who had lost their lives emigrating from Syria to Italy in a span of a year. And Marco couldn't reconcile with that reality and how, in the moment that he's welcoming his sons into the world, there are people losing sons and there are families losing children and they're just being washed offshore. And so he created this piece with 714 pairs of shoes of children, and he put cement in them. And this piece was bought by the Rennie Collection in Toronto in Canada. So conversations around immigration have always been very sensitive conversations for Marco. And I'm just deeply proud of him that he chose another medium to continue this conversation.
And say yeah, the stuff with the children really affected me. You have three children together. I have three kids as well. I can't imagine tackling a film on top of raising three kids. It just sounds intense. And I know the chaos that is three kids running around the house. So did this, like you said, you had to make room for it, like it was a person. Making this with your partner after all these years, did it open up avenues that you weren't aware of beforehand, just between the two of you?
Our life, we decide when we being together, Zoe and I, we are both gypsy, and we are when she have a project or I have a project, we decide to pick up everybody and just go in doing. That's the way we do it. We are elastic and fluid in that sense, you know, and that's the way we decide to live our life. And our life is to stick together in this sense. For us, when you're doing a film where he's so patient about that, the more important complex was we stick together this division, and we was lucky enough that, you know, we do this project. We really enjoy to spend time together, and our children was in set every day to really answer you the question.
You also have Martin Scorsese as a producer on here, I noticed. How did that come to pass, and what does he bring to the project?
This is weird, but true. I believe a lot in visualization. I spend an hour a day to visualize, and I start this film with a masterclass. I spent $50 with a masterclass. And there's one class of a Scorsese, and so I was looking up in the middle of the night. I said, what are you doing? I said, no, it's a lesson number four about editing, you know? She was laughing. True story, when we finished the film, the person really close to us and help us, like in a career-wise, his name is Ricchione, who is executive producer in the film. He's also the manager of my wife and myself, and he's also like the manager of Martin. And when he showed the film, he said, can I show it to Martin? I said, oh my God, yeah, we go to God. And, you know, I'm Italian, you know, all his film I grew up with, you know, and the short story, Martin was a big support, introduced me to Thelma Schutzmaker. I spend a lot of time with Thelma, learning a lot from Thelma. I still now be one of my preferred day to go outside my wife. I enjoy to have lunch with her in New York, listen all the story. And what's incredible, okay, now Martin is an executive producer on. I can't believe it. I honestly can't believe it, but I'm very, very grateful.
It was a welcome surprise when you're like, oh, Martin Scorsese, what the hell do you know? Without spoiling anything, I think you did the right thing in the ending. You ended it in such a way that you don't really give audiences the sigh of relief at the end that they may be wanting. You don't force answers down anyone's throats. You simply kind of make a sit in it and in the darkness of what's going on down there. Were you ever tempted or pressured in the end to kind of end it up on a higher note or anything like that? Or actually, it didn't feel the right way for that.
I think that's a very good point. If, you know, the movie I prefer grow up with, like, you know, the ending in this way. And for me, what was important is to open a film with a question and finish a film with a question. I think that was very important. When I do an art piece, I never try to tell to people how they need to think. And I really believe in this. I think art or cinema, they can change life, people's life. And I really believe what I'm saying. I think there is a very important part by the audience, how they're feeling. Mm-hmm. want to create a canvas where they can just feel it, you know, and I'm step out of that.
I think it's also important to know that conversations around immigration, stories around immigration, some have happy endings, but many, for the most part, lately, at least what we're picking up from the news, is that they don't. I think that what Marco did was an accurate depiction of an ongoing situation, dilemma that will continue because it's been going on since the beginning of time.
Absolutely. I agree. Zoe, my editor and my inner fanboy would be remiss if I didn't ask, you know, a few rapid fire questions about some of the projects that you've had in the past. As a huge Taylor Sheridan fan, I loved Lioness. I thought it was fantastic.
Thank you.
Is there a season 2 coming for that, or is that just a one and done kind of thing?
No. We are very much in talks of a season 2. We're very grateful that the show was received well. There were critics that if they were harsh in the beginning, after watching the show, they came back for a reevaluation. I was very grateful that they felt compelled to do that. And I'm indebted. I think that Taylor right now is one of the most on-demand sort of, you know, film and TV sort of creators right now. And he's popular for a reason. I think that he writes really, really well. I'm happy that he decided to also write a show like Lioness about the women in service.
Yeah.
I can't wait. I can't wait for us to sort of know when and where and how and what we're going to be doing for season 2.
Awesome. I can't wait for that. Like I said, I genuinely love season 1. Gamora, is she gone for good? What do we think?
I mean, so far I think that she is for me, but I don't think Gamora's gone for good. I would think it would be a huge loss for Marvel if they didn't find a way to bring back the Guardians of the Galaxy. It's just such a fan favorite group of misfits, you know? And then at the helm, they had a voice like James Gunn's, you know, writing that is just so marvelous and very specific for this genre. And it's so great for this genre as well. So I would be the first one in the first row to sort of celebrate when the Guardians of the Galaxy come back.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, one I've been waiting for a long time, and a lot of people probably ask you over and over again, is Uhura from Star Trek. I mean, it feels like, I mean, the cast is probably just hard to wrangle at this point. Are we giving up on Star Trek, or are we still having hope there?
I still have hope. I had a wonderful experience through and through and through, you know, the 3 times that I was a part of that team. I know that they're always trying to sort of aim to wrangle everybody together. But I also know that Paramount is working on a new sort of fresh take on Star Trek, which I think it's such a wonderful franchise that should live for a very long time. You know, whether or not us as the original remake cast can come back, I don't know, but I certainly hope so.
Great. All right. Well, Marco, now that you've gotten the first feature under your belt, are you jumping right back in, or are you?
Yes, we have a project now. It's a short film that we're going to premiere at the Venice Biennale in the 16th of April. And it's a project I wrote and directed in Zoe's part. And it's a short film that Zoe shot with 21 real women that are in prison. And the film is very, very special.
Amazing. All right. For our listeners, The Absence of Eden will be released exclusively in theaters on April 12th. Zoe and Marco did one hell of a job. Like I said, really affected me. Thanks for your time, guys. I appreciate
it. Thank you.